Explore a Verizon retail career in the San Francisco Bay Area and get a $1,500 sign-on bonus. Join the team that makes in-store experiences special by connecting customers with the perfect product every time. We offer standout benefits, including competitive pay, day one health and insurance benefits, $8,000 a year in college tuition assistance, plus bonus opportunities. Apply at Verizon.com/retail jobs. Again, that's Verizon.com/retail jobs. Verizon, it's better here. Verizon is an equal opportunity employer.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hey, hello there. Alive and well in our little land here.
Yes.
So, for this week, we're doing air, but before we start, I think we need to do like our touch-in. What's your week been like?
Well, airy. I own Milk and Honey, this little retail shop in Smashville, and so this is the time of the year where we are gearing up for the holidays, the winter holidays, and so I'm getting lots of merchandise coming in and lots of things I need to unwrap and put out and price and figure out and lots of mental processing. And last night we had our little goddess team meeting and went over some of the things that will be happening for the holidays. And so I'm very busy, and it's all mental busy stuff, mm-hmm. Very heady stuff. And so I feel super scattered today. Right? I'll mention it's not actually Friday for Elvira and I. It's Thursday morning. We're pre-recording, so I can take my partner away for his birthday.
This was very important. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
So that's also why I'm feeling flighty. Maybe
a little giddy.
Yeah, the morning is not as good for me as 6 p.m.
I understand that. I am not as much of a a.m. person as a p.m. person.
Yeah, me too. So, yeah, I'm a little loopy, flighty, confused, air-like things, which is appropriate, I suppose.
I guess we'll have to see how this one flies.
Yeah.
Oh, no pun intended.
Yeah. How about you?
Oh, well, there's always things going on. I noticed this week that a lot of clients that I've been having are about relationship, but it seems like in light of where we are in the solar year, it's almost like things are not opening up, they're closing down.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of problems with accepting things that aren't working.
Mm.
And I think that also makes for a time when you have to stay in your, not just your heart and your spirit, but really in the mind, because you've got to work with who these people are, where they're going. And I was like by the time I got to Wednesday, I kind of fell on my friend's couch and stared into the TV for some shows just so that everything could go into another space. So definitely a lot going on in that way. And obviously the research that was being done for this show is one that I was like, oh, it's air, it's air. And unfortunately, there are a lot of things about air, but some of it is more philosophical than practical.
Sure.
So we'll see where this one moves and flows to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and on that, one of the things I found, now obviously air is, we have touched on the weapon or tool of air, and again we're going to go back to the, is it a wand, is it a athame, then oh by the way throw a sword in there for that. But
so those who may have not listened to previous shows, feel free to go back and listen to our episodes on the wand and the athame, because you'll hear our in-depth conversation about which of those implements belongs to which element. So we'll touch base more on that again today.
Yeah. So one of the things that I did notice, I mean, obviously we were, you know, again, a little older ground, is that, you know, the in the tarot, it's the swords, which they chose to, based on more of a hermetic tradition, put it into. And I even found a lot on sylphs. Sylphs are the elemental spirits of air.
Right. You know what's funny? I've never known how to pronounce that. Sylphs.
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 Sylphs. Yeah, I've read that word a million times. I don't think I've ever said it out loud.
I know. It was like, oh, well, there are a few things here we're going to say that we may stumble over.
Right,
but
which
hopefully
is hilarious, because language is also one of the things connected to air.
That's true. So I guess that it's been a part of, you know, from Greek to European tradition in literature and part of human thinking for over hundreds of thousands of years. So as a concept or as an actual element, it is, you know, we breathe it. So obviously we're talking about something that is so very, here's the word, elemental, that it's part of us.
Right.
So, you know, they consider it maybe the origins in Neolithic times as to when, you know, what were they, you know, where were they going with it? Because it was, they were talking about how they dispose of bodies. It became very obvious. How do you dispose of a body? You either burn it or you expose it to the air for the carrions to take on, or you bury it.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as, and of course we have the other one that they have is cannibalism, so we won't go there.
Ooh, delicious.
I know. Not exactly my idea.
Yeah.
But I think that's how they started to think about air in terms of something.
Right, right.
So
there's also several systems. I know this is true for the Celtic systems and others that I don't necessarily have in my brain at the moment. But in some traditions, it's not air, it's sky, right?
Right.
The sky above us. And even so far as the stars and the Milky Way and all of that, that is the realm of sky.
Right.
Right? So there's this concept of air, this which I feel for modern paganism especially has become, you know, we breathe, we have lungs. There is this, the air not only helps us stay alive because of breath, but it actually pushes things through our body, our blood flow, all of those things happen, our brain stays awake because of air, right? So it's become more scientific.
Right.
Where I think potentially, you know, going back to the ancient ones, air was more of a concept of sky and this thing, the bigness around us, the bigness above us.
Right.
And the mystery that is contained in that bigness.
Right. Right.
But, you know, science and technology and some of the modern constructs that we have available to us now have taken some of the mystery out of the world.
Right.
Right? Where our ancestors, things that seem just simple and ordinary would have been freaking amazing.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Because they didn't have, as we have, the tools at the time to dissect things.
Right.
And, you know, and as you start to dissect things, humans and animals and earth and whatever, you start to find out what it's made of in more of a, as we talked, scientific basis.
Right.
So that is, and it's interesting because it's a, it, they level it as a male element.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which, you know, has, and they talk about the humors, you know, the in the medieval times, and then going into even the more Victorian times, they were talking about the humors and the in light of what they represent for illness, even.
Right.
Which was fascinating in its own right. I kind of had a hard time putting my modern mind back into something like that, but it did have a kind of a ring. Well, you know, if you have moist or if you mm-hmm. have dry or you know, it was always something about, well, it's the humor of the air.
Right, which also feeds into like the Chinese and Asian concepts of the elements, right, where they have wind or air
mm-hmm.
as one of the elements and the things being in balance.
Right.
In those different elements and how they relate to each other and affect each other, and if you have too much of this and not enough of that.
Yeah. The Vedic traditions, the Ayurvedics, you know, there's a certain sense of fire and air and, you know,
yeah.
moistness, water, things like that.
Right.
So it is very much a part of how they look at the body and the human
mm-hmm.
in terms of their health, which, again, I think the Europeans, we kind of skipped over. We went from awe and amazement to medical and dissecting
yeah.
and left out that other part. And so here we are as modern witches and pagans and looking at this in a way of, let's go back to the sky.
Right.
You know, to the awe
yeah.
of breath.
Right.
You know,
right.
And interesting enough, a side note, one of the things that I grew up with, obviously, was a father who was a therapist, but he was a therapist based on the concepts and traditions and training of Wilhelm Reich. And one of the biggest things that Reich put into practice for therapy was breath work.
Yeah.
And so it's been a part of my life on a different basis
mm-hmm.
in terms of that and what that means
mm-hmm.
to the body.
Yeah.
So for me to become spiritual and look at it from that point is not just a functioning. It's like I honor the body's breath because that process is what locks in or releases illnesses, emotional distress,
yeah.
you know, things of that nature.
Yeah, and breath work is imperative in so many traditions, you know, across the globe. Meditation practices mm-hmm. often there's a, you know, a breath work piece of it.
Right.
Even using mantras or chanting or singing, those are tools of air.
Right.
You know, so
right.
no matter how you sort of enter into a daily practice, there is some way that it's relating to air. There's some way it's relating to that energetic,
mm-hmm.
you know. And
mm-hmm.
there are ways you can control anxiety with breath. There are ways that you can bring yourself down from a panic attack with breath.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways that you can bring yourself out of trigger with breath. You know, there's all different sorts of tricks
right.
that most often involve your breath, because
right.
when you get into a fight or flight state, when you get into a panic, when you get into even depression, it throws off your system. And if you're not breathing
mm-hmm.
Correctly, or if
right.
you're not breathing deeply, if you're not feeding yourself just by slowing that down.
Right.
One of the breath techniques that I was taught around anxiety, which is something that I occasionally get to have fun and deal with,
mm-hmm.
Is 4-2-8-2. So you breathe in for a count of 4, you hold for a count of 2, you exhale for a count of 8, you hold for a count of 2.
Right.
And you just repeat that. And it's not only the process of the breath and slowing your breath, but it's paying attention to your breath.
Right.
And it's counting. And it's this process of slowing down and reconnecting to yourself
mm-hmm.
and becoming embodied.
Right.
And also taking control back of your brain. Because
right.
often, you know, those those things trigger you and your brain goes off in a million directions that you can't control. And by the counting and the focusing on your breath, you're bringing that mental capacity back under your control.
Right, right. Yeah. And that goes into, again, when you breathe deeply and you pull everything into the depths of your belly and then back up, what you're doing is you're creating release of, and here we go with science, endorphins, which bring the body and joy. It releases the joy process so that you feel more at ease.
Right.
And that's, so that whole process, however you get to that, whether it's the way Phoenix just mentioned or it is through another form of breathing that allows you to start deepening, because we start to shallow breathe when we get, you know, because that's the fight or flight. We got to go. We got to go. We got to go. That kind of thing.
And even the shallow breathing thing, there's been all kinds of studies done about people who work in the corporate environment. And now I'm feeling like I need to take a deep breath. But people who, if you're intently focused on something or if you have a high-stress job or whatever, people tend to not breathe enough. They have a shallow breath.
Right.
This can lead to all kinds of other dis-ease and issues and blah, blah, blah. So it's not just, oh, I'm going to go meditate and focus on my breath, or I'm having a panic attack, I'm going to focus on my breath. It's really giving yourself time throughout the day, every day, to connect with your breath and remind yourself to actually breathe, which our bodies do on their own.
Right.
But because of the way we construct our lives, they don't necessarily do it correctly anymore.
That's it.
Right.
Right. And so the fact that we're talking about air is not just this is a spiritual process and there are all these different gods and goddesses and tools and things.
Yeah.
This is also putting into practice the spirituality in a very real way, which is why, you know, I will tell my clients and suggest deep breathing, and I'll explain five, go into the, you know, go somewhere and do five deep breaths, just quietly five.
Yeah.
Do yoga, yes. Do meditation, yes. But sometimes we can't go into some area and strike a pose.
Right.
The other thing that I have found, and you're going to laugh at this, is there's another way that I tend to use breath, and that's when I get frustrated. I will go out and find a place reasonably alone, which is hard in any given situation, and I'll growl.
Yeah.
I will just get in and I will do this, you know, intense growl from the belly up, and I'll do like three of them. And then I'll walk back in, and I actually had that happen at work at Lucky Mojo, and I had had some things go on. And it was just very frustrating, and it was, you know, I had some clients, a series of them. By the time I got to the lunch break, I was going to gnarl and snarl. So I went around behind the church area, which is the smallest church in the world, which means there isn't a whole lot of room, and I just did a few growls. Well, obviously, I came in and started to have my lunch, and one of my coworkers said, just had the strangest thing. I thought I heard growling. And I said, yeah, it was me, and I explained, and she goes, oh. And then another coworker actually walked in who had been walking, you know, by. She said, well, I thought I saw a shadow, but I wasn't sure around the side of the church. But I heard growling. So obviously there was a sense of humor after all of this, but that process is about releasing. It's changing the way the body is holding yourself, your energies, your muscles.
Right.
So you
can
be funny about it.
Absolutely.
But
laughter is also a part of air.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that is another part. So, and obviously, we, as we said, we've had the discussion of athame, wand, but there is another, and feather. Feather appears in many of the different deities in terms of specific things, from birds, specifically birds, and the flight.
Right. So, you know, we've talked a lot about breath, right? So let's be clear. Air is not just this woo concept. It's not just, oh, the air, yay. It's literally a thing we need to survive, right? So when we talk about air, when we invite air into our sacred space, when we do these things, we are honoring the sacred forces that keep us alive. We are honoring what is required for us to continue to walk and talk and be human beings, right?
Right.
And within that, there is all this fun woo. There is all these cool correspondences. And you know, obviously, right, things that are able to fly are connected to air.
Yeehaw! So, and interesting is that different aspects. I know that as a child, I loved finding feathers.
Oh, yeah, me too. I mean, I still do.
And I still do. And actually, the altar that I presently have set up for air has two wings on it that were from an animal, a bird that, believe it or not, it wound up hitting the door of my office, which was at the time my husband's office, and he wanted to keep the bird. It was a crow.
Yeah.
And so we wound up taking and salting it and doing all the things that you needed to do to preserve the different things. And so I have them here as wings for the representation.
Very cool.
So we do have, in many spiritualities, they take the wings and they use them as fans. They use them as parts of the way to call air in.
Right.
So it is a tool, but it is not one of the four main basic tools that we have talked about.
Of modern witchcraft.
Of modern witchcraft.
Right. And I'll say, especially if you are, you know, when I was younger and I felt like I had to have a specific element, like that I belonged to a specific element. I don't feel that way anymore. But if you are an air person, having wings or bird pieces or butterflies enclosed in glass or feathers or whatever is really helpful to connect to that energetics. Just keep in mind that some of those pieces are not technically legal to have.
Right.
You know, Elvira's wings are gorgeous, but technically legal. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Well, no, I actually know the difference is there are certain endangered species you can't have. So.
Right, right. But you have to be careful. Like, I have a friend, and I've done this myself too, with roadkill.
Right.
Right? You're not supposed to, I'm saying this with air quotes, harvest roadkill. But if I see a dead owl on the side of the road, I'm going to go and clip those wings or do something with it and at least, you know, move it off of the
side. And honor it. Honor it.
So just be aware of that. It's no one's going to come knocking on your door and saying, excuse me, do you have an owl wing? No, that's not going to happen. But it, you know, just be cautious if you are collecting things to know.
Right.
And it is, from a cultural appropriation standpoint, having anything that is an American eagle, the bald eagle.
Exactly.
Is not okay. And that's the one line that I do draw for myself, because that is the only folks who are allowed to even have feathers of the bald eagle are indigenous people, because it is such a sacred symbol to them. So I highly recommend not using any parts, pieces, feathers from a bald eagle, because it is such a, first of all, it is illegal, because only indigenous folks are technically allowed to have those pieces. But for me, it feels like extra respect to the indigenous people to not use those pieces. There's plenty of other beautiful birds and feathers and opportunities to work with air.
Right. And we do know we find them all the time.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that even a friend of mine had a hummingbird that hit her window and died. And she basically, you know, took great honor with that. So there are things about feathers that are long time. I mean, you know, we can even go to present time feather boas and, you know, all kinds of things that represent that. And I think when we want to feel air, when we want to feel light, we create that by even just what we are putting on our bodies.
Right.
And so it's a way of being with that spiritual element, but without necessarily going into a circle or any kind of a ritual or anything of that nature. I know for a long time, you're going to date me, especially during the 60s and the 70s, you know, we would put feathers in our hair.
Right.
We would, you know, make it so that we'd put a tie and we'd do beading or whatever, and then we'd tie it into our hair as part of it, which if you look at other indigenous cultures and other traditions, that is also very much a part of that process.
Right.
So, these are everyday things you can work with. It is also processing the element that is of our mind.
Yes.
So it is when we talk about, well, we've been all over the place. Well, we're filling the world with our air brain.
Right.
And I don't mean that as a, you know, air head, but we do tend to get sort of spacey sometimes and for other reasons.
Yeah, spacey and also analytical,
yeah.
Right? So, you know, the connection to the mental and the brain and the thought.
Right.
Very air. And so, you know, we have all these, you know, being airheaded, being bird-brained, all these words.
Right.
About how air is not necessarily a positive thing around mental capacity.
Right.
My word's not working. But there's also the connection to air from a mental perspective. This is also how you are analytical, how you do have your thought process, how you can flow on the wind from one thought to the next thought or what have you, and being able to process things.
Right, yeah. Right. And, you know, from that, so words that would fit this element are light, flight, scent. Is, you know, I mean, these are part of the air coming into our being able to smell things. You know, when people say, you know, something doesn't smell right.
Right.
There are reasons these are because there is a shift, a subtle shift. It might not be that it stinks kind of
right.
smell.
Right.
But your sense is something is changed. Something is kind of off a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tend to use that. And just like somebody says, well, we're airheaded. Well, we also might be more in our brain, but we also might be more out there with the vastness,
right.
Going back to the concept of our primitive or more ancient traditions of seeing the vastness of everything.
Right.
And flighting and flowing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And go ahead.
In most traditions, air is connected to the East.
Mm-hmm.
It is often considered the first of the elements,
mm-hmm.
right? In the reclaiming tradition, we invoke air first. I know in many traditions, air or earth are invoked first when
right.
you're creating your sacred space.
Right.
Often we set up our altars in the East, which is the direction of air
mm-hmm.
in most modern pagan traditions.
Right.
And the reason for the air and the East and that connection is because if air is the first, East is the dawn. It's where the sun rises. It's where the day begins. It's the first. It's the first steps. It's the beginnings, daybreak, all of that. And so air becomes connected to all of those energetics too.
Right.
The freshness, the newness, the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, and again, we're talking, this is spiritual. This is what we see, but it's a real thing. I mean, we look at the East where the sun rises. So new beginnings. So
right.
The element of air is about new beginnings as much as it is continuing our process of life.
Right.
And it is also, the element represents the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Oriental tradition, the concept of the Oversoul or Atman is basically about air.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where they look at it, an atmosphere, Atman.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the world. So it was a very interesting, I was sitting there going, wow, because a lot of it, when I started moving out of some of the more Wiccan and mm-hmm. pagan process and working with more of the, I guess we're going to call it light body people
mm-hmm.
that were into that, you know, to the philosophies and going into that and working with it,
yeah.
There was a whole structure of the Oversoul.
Mm.
And connecting with the Oversoul,
mm.
which is, of course, you know, the divine
right.
in another form.
Right.
So it was kind of interesting when I started reading. I'm like, see, I didn't necessarily know where this situation came from,
mm-hmm.
but it was from the Oriental tradition.
Mm. In the Celt tradition, there is this concept, and this is also true. It's not called, well, let me back up. In the Celtic tradition, it's called the cauldrons, the three
mm-hmm.
cauldrons. In other traditions, this idea of a triple soul also
uh-huh.
exists.
Right.
But it's not quite. They definitely make sense if you overlay them to each other, but they're
right.
very different systems.
Right.
But like I mentioned earlier, the Celts use a land, sea, and sky concept. So it's not air, it's sky.
Uh-huh.
And the cauldrons are in our bodies, and they're literally, like, you can actually literally see, like, your pelvic bowl.
Right.
That's the the land cauldron,
right,
to the earth. The sea cauldron is your heart, the
right,
chalice that overflows.
Right.
And then the sky cauldron is your brain. It's the skull, your cap.
Right.
And the goal through spiritual development is not to literally turn your skull up over, but we are all born with our sky cauldron being up and open,
right,
to the gods.
Right.
And as we grow, that cauldron turns and closes off.
Right.
And we lose our connection to the divinity or our higher self.
Right.
Which is that oversoul idea, our higher self, and being able to connect, which makes so much sense that because of all the gods that are communication gods and connected to air, like,
right,
Mercury and, you know, or Hermes, right, the Greek god with the wings on his shoes,
mm-hmm,
right? He can go in between the realms.
Right.
He's a communicator.
Right.
He helps with all of that kind of stuff. So this concept of connecting to our divinity and being able, I don't know why when I think about the triple soul or the cauldrons, I feel like the communication moves upward, you,
yes,
know, more from my primal self to my talking brain. That it's probably the most challenging one to deal with.
Right.
Up to my divine self, which is the hardest one to communicate with.
Right.
And it feels like a very Mercury-type energy,
mm-hmm,
to be able to flow and listen to my divine self or my higher self or that,
right,
deeper soul.
Right.
What is the voice of that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there are some, you know, it's when you think of it, the breath goes into our bodies when we first come out of the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the more ancient tradition was to breathe into the nostrils of the child to bring the breath into the child,
right,
to bring it up rather than, and it was interesting when I was reading this, slapping on the butt and making it cry, which is very patriarchal, very male, very macho, you know, like, get that air out there, come on, give a cry. And I understand the concept of filling the lungs with that, but you don't have to be brutal about it,
right,
in many ways.
Right.
And I think the older traditions were much more gentle,
yeah,
about bringing the soul or the life breath forward in from the higher process into the body.
Right. Well, and there's all of these very interesting superstitions or beliefs,
mm-hmm,
about the breath from different traditions, especially Polynesian culture and,
mm-hmm,
the New Zealanders, the Aboriginal folks from Australia,
mm-hmm,
the concept of breath and what breath does and how it impacts who we are and how we interact with the world and the whole, and you could probably speak more to this than I could, but the Hawaiian concept of calling the white folks howlies because,
mm-hmm,
they lacked breath.
Exactly.
Right? So there's this whole thing in these indigenous cultures about breath.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That
power of it.
The power of it. And when you think about the things that people utilize, obviously you'll go, oh, well, there was a shell that they used to call the wind,
mm,
you know, but you think about how you have to blow into that shell. There is a specific way you hold your breath, just like when you're talking about flutes,
right,
and wind instruments.
Right.
There's a way to breathe into this process. And I think for all of us, we don't need to go take the flute up or run out and find a conch shell to blow. But the idea is that we shift the way we take our breath in and out, shifts our consciousness.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what we were talking about before about breathing and, you know, watching how we go deeper, you know, change our emotional, mental state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
That is something they've done all along, and the tools vary,
right,
with cultures and availability,
right,
but I think that we bring the life in, and then of course the life goes out at the end, the last breath. Interesting enough, one of the things I was it came to mind when I was reading it was talking about taking a mirror and putting it up to the nostrils of the dead person.
Right, to make sure they were really dead.
Yeah. Well, in Charade, which is a movie with, you know, Audrey Hepburn and,
yep,
Cary Grant, we had Lee Marvin, who played a kind of a very difficult individual, did that with the person that died, and they wanted to make sure, and so he comes in and he takes his mirror out, and then he puts it up there, and I looked at it, and when I was reading this, that thought, that vision came to mind. Well, really what it is not to determine if they were really dead, it was to capture the escaping soul.
Mm.
so it didn't go off and get lost.
Right.
Which I thought was very interesting, as opposed to what has obviously become a more folksy thing.
Sure.
But there is the letting go,
right.
The breathing out,
right.
The soul that was released
right.
through that breath.
And that concept of calling in what you want on your inhale and releasing what you don't want on your exhale, you know, we think of the spirit exhale, you know, that last exhale and you leaving your spirit leaving your body. But that is a practical tool that you can use
mm-hmm.
any time, you know, taking a deep breath. And for some reason, there's a power in the three.
Right.
You know, taking three deep breaths. And for me, the first exhale is the most important. Like, what is this shit that I'm holding on to that I need to let go of? And letting that exhale go and then calling in what I need through the inhale and releasing whatever else is stuck in there. And
right.
It really, you know, for breath and for air to be so airy and mental, it actually really helps you to become more earthy and grounded in a body.
Exactly.
You know, how these two forces feed off of each other.
Right.
Just the process of breathing in and breathing out what you need to release can really just bring you right back into feeling centered.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And obviously these, you know, we have, I think when we get back from break, we'll talk about, you know, the process of creativity.
Yeah.
Because this is another part of the mind, i.e. the air process and the creativity. But I know that a lot of what we see in the air element is what I would call a sense of aliveness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fire has its own, the earth has its own, the water has its own. But air to me, when I have breezes and winds
mm-hmm.
and things that are out there, or fans when you're hot and you don't have mm-hmm. a wind, it's an aliveness. You
yeah.
feel alive.
Yeah.
And like, that's why going to the ocean or the beach or any place where there's water and air currents,
mm-hmm.
you feel so alive. And it's not just scientific. There is a scientific background. On
right.
It. So, okay. So we will be back after break.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Irwin and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candelo's Corner with Candelo Camusa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Bit of Boxy with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursday 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Friday 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Western, Saturdays 5 to 7, all time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
We are back.
Hello.
So, now that we've got our second wind, we will talk more on some other aspects of wind, air, and I think I will turn it over to Phoenix.
Oh, sweet.
Yes.
So there's lots of correspondences connected to air, right? So we talked about some of those, the east, the dawn, birds, butterflies, dragonflies, things that are in the air. But there's also colors, yellow or white, are
uh-huh.
often traditionally connected to the element of air, sometimes a light blue
uh-huh.
Or blue in general, right, because of
right.
the sky.
Hi.
Sky. We also have smoke and winds and fans and incense. You know, we talked a little bit about the wand athame thing, which I think we'll probably touch on it momentarily. But also the tool, the energetic on your altar for air is often incense.
Exactly.
You know, you can have your athame or your wand, depending on how you use that correspondence with the element.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really want to have a connection to air, incense is a really powerful way to do it. And it can be tricky because there's a lot of folks who have sensitivity to smoke and to scent.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something super witchy.
Oh, yes.
Super powerful, super, I don't know, otherworldly about having that incense burning through your ritual and having that smoke sort of float through and expand. And you know, I could, depending on the incense, I can really go for some heavy smoke.
Right.
Depending on the incense, I can go for none at all.
It depends on
what kind of incense it is. But it does add this air of mystery and intrigue and interest to the ritual. So if you can handle smoke and incense, I highly recommend keeping it burning. And in some traditional Wicca, you know, especially Gardnerian Wicca,
right,
the incense is supposed to be kept burning through the whole ritual. And it's one of the covenor's jobs to keep that incense going. There is a reason for that. It alters your perception. It alters your the reality of the room. It adds mystery.
Right.
And it's not just witches that do this. Look at the Catholic Church.
Their censer that they...
Yeah. They walk down the aisle swinging that censer and spreading the incense. And another reason for that, you know, wands and or not wands, fans and sage and incense is cleansing.
Right.
Which we may not necessarily think of in connection to air. Right? We often think of water as a cleanser.
Right.
But air is a very powerful cleanser. Our spirit bodies react to a cleansing from air more than our water.
Right.
Our physical body reacts to a cleansing from water, literally, you know. But that air, that wind, that smoke, that blowing, that fanning can clear out the gunk from your spirit body.
Wonderful. Wonderful, yes. And as we go back, when you use even a rattle, rattle is a very powerful tool to clear and cleanse. And sometimes, you know, again, I talk to clients and say, get a rattle, go get a baby rattle.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
Because as soon as you hit that energy cleansing of that sound, it breaks apart like stuff. And you can feel it. I know that a long time ago, someone that I had worked with was very, she was of Native American tradition. And when she would work the rattle, I mean, it would send chills. And it was just like totally, you could feel it. You could really feel it. So that's another tool to utilize, another item to use for that cleansing. And it's true.
And music is connected to air, music and chanting and singing. And so there's another interesting overlap with the rattle and the drum,
right,
which can often be connected to earth,
right,
because they're very grounding and energetically very solid, right? But they're also musical instruments.
Right.
So there's this interesting overlap, but music and song, using music and song as a way of connecting to the element of air or opening yourself up or breathing more deeply or whatever are really powerful ways. And often there in the reclaiming tradition, I teach this class called Elements of Magic, which is sort of the intro to how reclaiming witches do stuff.
Right.
Right. And so our first night is always air. We start with air.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most talky.
Right.
Because it's our first night, so we have to do all this. So this is what we're going to do in this class, and here's our rules, and here's how we hope everyone, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
All the talky stuff. But then I really try to bring in song and music.
Because
there's something about music. You know, it also goes back into the breath work that we were talking about.
Right.
There's something about music that really changes are energetic.
Mm-hmm.
It can make you happy and bubbly. It can make you serious. It can make you emotional.
Right.
And so, again, there's this interesting overlap between the other elements, all of them, actually.
Yes.
And air and this concept of song and voice.
Right.
And shifting energy from that perspective.
And it's interesting, in the Hawaiian tradition, and as I was being trained, because the navigational tradition, a branch of the kahuna teachings, it's on air. It is air, but it isn't necessarily breath. But one of the things Kahu Abraham would talk about was us Howleys love to get into our sorrow and our grief and all our songs of tragedy and things. And he says, we sing about the beauty of the catch, the beauty of the waves, the beauty of the trees and whatever was going on. And if you think about what energies you hear, even if you don't know what they're singing, it is always one of, there's such a joy and peace.
Yeah.
That they work with. It is never, you know, my baby left me and I'm all down and depressed, you know. I know we want to throw out our energy and release it, but they talk more about, they work with the joy.
Mm. Interesting, because, you know, I probably have mentioned this before, but we've been doing this Beauty Pentacle class for the last 6 weeks, and it just finished up this last Tuesday. And one of the last class, we handed it over to the students and said, okay, you plan our final ritual together,
mm-hmm.
for beauty. And we did this guided meditation, or a Zen contemplation, really, is what it was. And you hold beauty in one hand and grief in the other. And you look at the balance and expressing these two things and seeing how they flow together and are connected. And,
right.
And again, this feels like, the elements takes us back to the roots of who we are as humans. It takes us back to the roots of who we are as witches.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these concepts, I feel like, you know, the balance of beauty and grief, the balance of anger and happiness, the balance of whatever.
Yeah.
Any emotion that could be, a you know.
Right, love and hate,
things
like that, yeah.
These are the concepts that connect to the building blocks and to the elements and the air and the idea of contemplation. And it's just, like, there's, you know, I was worried that we might not have enough to talk about for air, you know, but I feel like there is so much because it's foundational.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we even can go to, in the Greeks, it was the muse, the muses, the inspiration, the creativity.
Right.
And, you know, it pulls that part of our mind into the beauty of what is out there and how to express it, the different forms that we use to express it. So the other part of it that I found fascinating, and this was the weather, you know, you had mentioned way back in one of our earlier shows about the Weather Witch.
Oh, yeah, the Isis magic.
The Isis magic. Right. And I'm reading and I'm looking for some different things, you know, trying to get out of the norm of what we normally have. And it came to weather and storms and wind and hurricane and the energy of how you would call them and bring them into existence, but not just how to do it, but what they represent. So I don't know if you want to kind of expound on that, if you have something, you know, going on. You know, it was just, I was fascinated. They talked about Dobby stones. And Dobby stones, and I thought, of course, Harry Potter.
Oh,
Dobby.
Yeah, sure.
But Dobby stone is a natural occurring or it can be hollowed out by human, but it was a kind of a cup-like stone, natural or otherwise, and you would leave offerings of milk and honey for the spirit of air to create good weather. And one of the things, and I did remember this when I was in Scotland, is that the fishermen would create a labyrinth to walk in and create the energy pattern to call the winds or to calm the winds. And so the aspect of working in unison with the elements, I think, is more what I would say here, in working with air rather than we will go ahead and do this to destroy our enemies, which I'm sure is also part of, you know, some of it. But, you know, the whirlwind, the twisting, turning, that process, it was amazing. I was thinking, wow, this is something I want to kind of, you know, check out.
Right. Well, and a little earlier we talked about connecting to an element and having belonging to an element or what have you. And I think working with the elements as individuals, as individual energetics, can be very powerful in your growth as a witch and a priestess.
Right.
And spending a significant amount of time just focusing on air and contemplating air and doing air workings and going to the mountaintop and feeling the air and waking at dawn and taking these times to connect to the things that are traditionally air-like. It's going to deepen your relationship to witchcraft, and it will deepen your relationship to each of the elements. So, you know, you'll hear me repeat this concept as we get into a conversation about all the elements. But, you know, singing and I, you know, I this may be an intense way to do it, but I would even recommend spending a year and a day with each element. You know, this is my air year, this is my water year, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, go in whatever order you want.
Right.
But working with that concept and those energies and seeing how your relationship with that element unfolds, because it's not just this amorphous thing. We also talk about, you, if you've ever been in a circle or if you've gone to any open gatherings, you may have heard someone call on the guardian of the watchtower,
right?
So each element has a watchtower, and each watchtower has a guardian, and it, so you can go to visit that guardian, ask that guardian its secrets, ask what you need to know about the element of air for your own life and your own development, you know, and some of the guardians, and depending on your tradition, the guardian may be a very specific creature, or it may be more amorphous, or it may be up to you to decide. It might be your own personal watchtower. I'm not going to tell you what of those things is accurate, but it, you know, it may be the dawn lion, which is one traditional one. It could be how did you say it again?
Sylph.
Or a fairy,
right?
Or angels, or devas, the spirits of air, dragons.
Right.
There are all of these creatures that are air creatures that may end up being the guardian of your personal watchtower,
right,
or of that specific air watchtower.
Right.
But spending time and working with this energy is also going to help you learn to do that weather magic that Elvira was talking about. You can play with the wind. You can ask the wind to shift and change. You can go out and lay in a field and poke holes in clouds. Do it.
Yeah.
You can. Do it. It's fun.
Yeah. And she was talking, Phoenix was talking about the watchtowers.
Yeah.
Interesting is that they are stellar. They are from a level higher, so they've had different monikers. For, you know, the shining ones, the mighty lords of the elements, or the, you know, the mighty ones, powerful ancestral guardians. And as they started out in a larger point, and then each culture has appropriated to the different things, because they are the four elements, winds, directions, and they thus become more and more. So you then get the archangels.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking at the east, it is the Archangel Raphael, which if you're going to go then and go, well, that's Mercury, that's Hermes, that's, you know, because of the wind, the wings, and, you know, the dynamic. But it's interesting, whatever traditional feel you have or sense, sometimes we come to Wicca and witchcraft, but we also have started life in the Catholic Church or in some other tradition. There is actually a history, and it doesn't have to be negative.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously, some of us can get kind of hot under the collar about what happened and all this, but it's a tradition that follows through. So
the human tradition,
the
not
human
a spiritual tradition.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you need to go and see that watchtower. And, you know, Pegasus, winged horses, all of these mythical creatures. I actually did not get a chance to find my information, but there, I wanted to list a bunch of different mythical creatures, the griffin, things that are of winged tradition in terms of that, not as monsters, but as the potential of the guardians, the aspects.
Yeah.
So I know that at this point, you know, you can even go to, I mean, the Vedic tradition, you know, the tatwa, the vayu, there is a certain sound, a certain color, you know, the upward pointing triangle as a symbol for it.
Right.
And it took me back as a couple of the books I was looking at, because, yes, I do look at real, honest-to-goodness, hardcover books, I realized I had read way back when I started.
Sure.
And one of them was talking about making a plaque for each element,
sure.
each direction.
Sure.
And when I was reading it, I was going, oh, my goodness, because actually I do know where those are.
Oh.
And I have it in a box in a closet because I kept them because I had changed how I could set up my house and
cool.
size. But it brought back that memory of starting and working on that. So homework, go out and find a way to put in a creative form a shield for the east, for air, for that process.
Go connect to the winds, go to the mountaintop, go to the beach and feel the wind and connect to air and make it your own. But, you know, do it. We encourage you this week, if not sooner, to go and experience air.
Quickly, before we get called to our ending, we are going to do a air bibliomancy.
Okay.
So
this is the Book of Pagan Prayer. I'm going to flip open to this page, and I'm just going to read exactly where my finger lands. Before I go to sleep, I extend my thoughts to all in my house and ask that we might live together in peace. Before I go to sleep, I extend my thoughts to the human community and ask that we might live together in peace. Before I go to sleep, I extend my thoughts to all living creatures and ask that we might live together in peace.
Blessed be.
Next week, Spellcraft.
And we will see you.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Want great pay and lots of perks? Get a $1,500 sign-on bonus when you join the Verizon retail team in the San Francisco Bay Area now. Help connect customers with the perfect products every time. Apply at Verizon.com/retail jobs. Verizon is an equal opportunity employer. Explore a Verizon retail career in the San Francisco Bay Area and get a $1,500 sign-on bonus. Join the team that makes in-store experiences special by connecting customers with the perfect product every time. We offer standout benefits, including competitive pay, day one health and insurance benefits, $8,000 a year in college tuition assistance, plus bonus opportunities. Apply at Verizon.com/retail jobs. Again, that's Verizon.com/retail jobs. Verizon, it's better here. Verizon is an equal opportunity employer.